2005, baseball's back. The game, Washington Nationals 5, Arizona Diamondbacks 3. Where? RFK Stadium, Washington, D.C. Attendance 45,596 on Thursday, April 14, 2005. The weather, perfect. Hall of Famers? Nationals manager Frank Robinson. Game highlights. For a team that played 22 of 81 home games each of the past two seasons in Puerto Rico and the first nine games of 2005 on the road, these former Montreal Expos were just happy to settle down in a stadium they could call home for the next 3 years. The new Washington Nationals provided more than enough offense this night in front of more than 500 national media representatives and an emotional, nostalgic, and electrified sellout crowd. Nationals starting pitcher Leivan Hernandez, 1997 World Series MVP for the Florida Marlins, took a 5-0 lead into the ninth inning before needing relief help from 22-year-old closer Chad Cordero. Veteran third baseman Vinny Castilla, who had spent most of his big league career with the Colorado Rockies, was just a single away from becoming the second Nationals player in 8 days to hit for the cycle. Center fielder Brad Wilkerson had done it in the season's second game at Philadelphia. Diamondback reliever Lance Cormier ended the historic bid when he delivered his first pitch to Castilla's back. The young right-hander was lustily booed by the home crowd that was quickly relearning the nuances of fandom after 33 years without baseball. Castilla would finish with a double, triple, homer, and four RBIs. The story. I had been planning this night for more than 6 months, but it was a night nearly 34 years in the making. After Major League Baseball announced on September 29, 2004, they would be relocating the Montreal Expos to Washington, D.C. for the 2005 season, I was overcome with nostalgic joy. The Washington Post shared my emotional letter to the editor the following week. The return of baseball stirs up a lifetime of memories. I remember the transistor radio under my pillow and the voices of Shelby Whitfield, Tony Roberts, and Ron Menchin. I remember watching games on Channel 9 with Warner Wolf and Ray Scott. I was 11 when I attended the last Senators game with my dad. I begged him to let me go out on the field with everyone else as all hell broke loose. Dad said no. I cried myself to sleep that night. We journeyed to Baltimore for many years whenever the Texas Rangers came to town, but that interest eventually faded. Once, I made a banner and hung it from the mezzanine of Memorial Stadium. It said, "Go Senators." A big picture of it appeared the next day on the front page of the sports section of the Washington Star. I remember Dad taking me to Rinaldi's Cleaners near the White House one Saturday morning. That's where the team's uniforms got laundered. Old Mr. Rinaldi let me try on the jerseys of Frank Howard and Reggie Jackson. The jerseys were bigger than I was. Memorial Stadium's gone now. So are the Star and Rinaldi's. And yes, Dad's gone too. But he'll be with us in April when I take his grandchildren to RFK. Baseball's back. Michael Ortman, Ellicott City. On April 14, 2005, I had a promise to keep. Only three of Roundy's grandchildren were available to join me and Kate, Daniel, 16, Greg, 13, and Mary, 10. The other three were not living at home at the time. We took Metro Rail to RFK Stadium, a mode of transportation that didn't exist in 1971. A friend in the Nationals' makeshift front office helped me buy, at face value, five of the hottest tickets in D.C. sports history. Scalpers were getting more than $1,000 per ticket, and the crowd was a who's who in the nation's capital. Among the more than 45,000 fans able to get tickets for this historic event, relatively few attended that chaotic finale in 1971. After all, there were only 14,460 of us that night. Many of them, like Roundy, had long since passed away. We arrived about 4:30 p.m., 2.5 hours before game time, and security lines were already quite long. President Bush was expected to join the celebration. I couldn't wait to get through the metal detectors to lay my eyes on something I hadn't seen in a very long time. My personal field of dreams. As we waited, the kids were very tolerant of my childish chatter. I'll never forget, there used to be a peanut vendor who... I remember the time we used to park the car over there. Daniel even politely asked why, if the new team was playing in the same stadium as the old team, they didn't have the same name, Senators. I explained that local politicians didn't like the old name since Washington did not have elected representation in the United States Senate. Besides, during the first half of the 20th century, they used the names Senators and Nationals, or Nats for short, interchangeably, so for this new team, Nationals worked. In the decades since a real baseball game had been played at RFK, I had attended at least 100 soccer or football games here, but ignored more than a dozen baseball exhibitions. I had memories of many Senators games, including my first frigid opening day in 1970, sitting high above third base as part of a capacity crowd. I also remembered sitting much closer to the field, just beyond first base, for that sparsely attended finale in 1971. Once inside, but before climbing to the upper deck, I insisted we visit the front row of Section 211, where Roundy and I sat on September 30th, 1971. Thanks to our early arrival, no ushers impeded the pilgrimage. As the five of us entered the lower bowl of this vintage 1960s multipurpose stadium, I felt like actor Ned Beatty as Rudy's dad entering Notre Dame Stadium and seeing the band of the Fighting Irish for the first time. "This is the most beautiful sight these eyes have ever seen." The city government spent more than $18 million to quickly get the 44-year-old dump ready again for baseball, and MLB schedulers put the Nats on the road for the season's first 2 weeks to buy the work crews more time for the makeover. They slapped sufficient lipstick on this pig to last 3 seasons. They even repainted, in white, 3 specific seats in the upper deck, the landing spot of monster home runs hit by Frank Hondo Howard more than a generation ago. Whoever had purchased those opening night seats in Section 211 had not yet arrived, so we made ourselves comfortable. I pointed to center field and explained to the kids about the 2-part sign that scrolled from the upper deck the night of the final game, chastising Senators owner Bob Short, who was taking our team to Texas. Short. Stinks. For a moment, I paused and thought about the people of Montreal. Somewhere in French-speaking Canada was a little boy who attended the Expos finale, but had no opening day this year. I then pointed to the upper deck above third base and told Kate, "That's where Roundy and I sat for opening day 1970. I tried to explain to the kids how there used to be football seats where left field and center field were this night. Those sections shook during the rowdy Super Bowl years under Joe Gibbs. Sufficiently reconnected, we zigzagged our way to the upper deck, grabbed a bite and a beverage, and scaled the steps to the 14th row of Section 550, just shy of the very top. Uniformed military stood watch, alternating their gaze between the growing crowd inside the stadium and the throng they could see over the wall waiting outside. The kids passed some of the pregame time, letting these Air Force spotters know their oldest brother also wore a uniform. Brad was in his second year at West Point.
"Go Army! Beat Air Force!"
Mary proclaimed. As angry as we had been at Major League Baseball over the years for failing time and again to restore baseball in Washington, tonight all was almost forgiven. The Nationals still had no owner, so this was MLB's team. They staged a memorable pregame ceremony that connected 1971 to 2005 almost as if only a single offseason had passed. Picking right up where he left off 34 years and 8 days ago on opening day 1971, my former boss, 77-year-old public address announcer Charlie Brotman, introduced the coaches and players. First, the visiting Arizona Diamondbacks, then the home team Nationals. The ovation was deafening. RFK was shaking. Servicemen and women unfurled an American flag that spanned the outfield, and opera star Renee Fleming provided an inspiring rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner as four F-16 jets rumbled across the sky. There had been rumors a few still-living Washington senators would participate in the festivities. What played out in the moments that followed spanned generations. Former Senator Joe Grazenda emerged from the Nationals' third-base dugout. Grazenda was, quite literally, the last man standing on September 30, 1971. That night, with the Senators protecting a 7-5 lead in the ninth, Yankees outfielder Bobby Mercer hit a ground ball to Grazenda, who flipped to first baseman Tom McGraw for the second out. McGraw had put the Senators ahead in the bottom of the eighth with a two-out pinch-hit single. Coincidentally, McGraw was in the Nationals' dugout this night, serving as the team's 2005 hitting instructor. Grazenda never got to throw another pitch that night in 1971 as angry fans poured onto the field. Players fled to the locker rooms for safety, the umpires called the game a forfeit in favor of New York, and Grazenda held on to that baseball for 33 years, 6 months, and 14 days. On opening night 2005, he handed it to the President of the United States. George W. Bush took the mound and threw a strike to Brian Schneider. RFK shook again. The scriptwriters perhaps saved the best for last. Brotman, who had introduced President Bush at his second inaugural less than 3 months earlier, resumed his baseball duties, introducing a cast of former Washington senators. He had no trouble with pronunciations. He had introduced each of them decades before. One by one, they emerged from the dugout, each wearing a Nationals warm-up jacket and a baseball glove, almost as if they were ready to play. Seven-time All-Star Mickey Vernon, 87, made his way to first base. Vernon's career stretched from 1939 to 1960, including a two-year pause to serve in World War II. The much younger Roy Sievers, only 78, had a longer journey to the outfield. The 1949 AL Rookie of the Year was joined by Fred Valentine and Jim Lemon, who managed the Senators in 1968. Then came the younger guys who played here at RFK in the 1960s and 70s, former Howard University baseball coach and founder of the Major League Baseball Players Alumni Association, Chuck Hinton, slick fielding shortstop Eddie Brinkman, pitcher Jim Hannon, and the starter of that final game in September 1971, Dick Bosman. They saved the best for last. With the crowd already in a nostalgic frenzy, 68-year-old Frank Howard, the ever-humble Hondo, limped his way to left field. The triumphant soundtrack from The Natural filled the stadium. If I had closed my tear-filled eyes, I would have seen the lights atop RFK exploding as Howard, not Roy Hobbs, rounded the bases. RFK was shaking. Grown men were crying. Before the crowd could catch its breath, the cast of lesser-known young men joined their elders. Vernon welcomed 26-year-old Nick Johnson to first base. Hinton greeted Vinny Castilla at third. Christian Guzman introduced himself to Brinkman at short. And Brad Wilkerson was overshadowed by the still larger-than-life Howard in left. The Senators then removed their mitts and handed them over. The baseball gloves, like this night, belonged to the Washington Nationals. The celebration continued for most of the next 2.5 hours until the post-game fireworks had subsided. This city hadn't seen a major league game in more than a generation, but these fans were clearly ready to resurrect Washington's storied baseball past, turn the page, and help write the next chapter. "This is closure for me. It really is," the 61-year-old Bosman told Jeff Barker of the Baltimore Sun. "That last game here was chaotic. You just knew something was going to happen, and it turned into mayhem." Among the World Series-like throng of sports writers in the Nationals' locker room after the game was Tim Brown of the Los Angeles Times. He observed plain-spoken veteran relief pitcher Joey Eishen sharing his first impressions with Washington Post columnist Tom Boswell. Eishen looked at a Washington reporter, Brown wrote, and explained, "Y'all's baseball fans never left. Baseball did. And then it came back." For the box score and play-by-play, and a reunion of sorts with one of Frank Howard's actual 1969 game jerseys more than 50 years later, visit openingday5050.com.